your soul. And Beaver, don't crep parole.
What up, everybody? It is 10 a.m. in the District of Columbia. Points north, south, east, and west. You're listening to B. Mitch and Finley, and all the boys are back together again. The prison cell, the aquarium, we're all here. Good morning, Brian.
And Brian is early.
Yo, late Brian was here when
he was
walked
here
in.
We walked in. I couldn't believe it. Once out of 200 days.
I don't know that the air conditioning is properly working in here, but it does feel better than the tent.
It kind of feels like it feels a little bit like the tent. But I'm already starting to perspire a little bit, though.
A little perspiration. Mm-hmm. We'll see how it goes. We're back. Landfill, I'm sure, is thrilled to see us. White Brian can barely contain his enthusiasm. We're off and running, and honestly, got a little breaking news here off the top. Mark Seagraves, who has just dominated this the stadium story, the RFK Stadium story throughout, just tweeted out, maybe the Commanders have announced this too. The Commanders sent everybody on the city council from Mendelson all the way to Felder, everybody involved, they sent a new letter regarding the redevelopment of the RFK campus. And there is a lot in here, but one of the biggest questions, what's one thing, unless you're working with Paul Henry, what's one thing that happens in construction? It ends up costing more.
Oh, yeah.
Right? This letter is to Mendelson and all of the council members. And the first bullet point, much like, you know how you and I always circle back to the first bullet point on the Senate's legislation that gave the city the land back?
Yep.
The first bullet point was to build a stadium.
Stadium.
Right?
Yeah.
The first bullet point tends to be the most important. The first bullet point in this letter, and I read now, the club will be responsible for all cost overruns for the stadium and parking projects. The club is also responsible for all stadium maintenance costs in excess of the stadium maintenance fund. That's been a huge topic. Mm-hmm. Who's going to pay when the costs go higher?
Yeah.
And they're left hand up. We're paying for it, dude.
Well, you know, if they, like I said, we're looking at a stadium right now that they're redoing and adding parts to. There's a practice facility that they may stay at or they may leave it, but they are upgrading it and they're investing in it. They understand to keep value, you got to put something into it. So if this stadium is built as they say it's going to be, there will be things that needs to be done to keep it going. And if you are benefiting from it, why wouldn't you want to do it? You know, and let's be real. Eventually, when the other side starts getting money, they'll realize that, you know what, we have to help out too. They'll do it. It all it'll go where it's supposed to go as time goes on. I understand that, you know, and listen, you want to get as much as you can out of this thing, but you can't keep expecting everything out of it if you ain't putting nothing in it.
Totally. I'm going to continue to read here because this is really interesting. I retweeted it. Seagraves had it first to me, of my knowledge. The second bullet point, this has been a huge sticking point because you do events over there. The fields at RFK, like all these playing fields for these kids, are packed. And they got flag football, soccer. Like, it's always jumping over there with kids' sports. And let's be real, you don't want to lose that. You understand construction could change things. But the second bullet point says, the club will plan construction and development of the stadium and the mixed-use environment in a manner that allows the fields at RFK campus to remain open.
I thought that was discussed already, though.
Sure, but now
they're just adding it in a letter.
The team is just making it, putting it official on the record. You got this now. All right, we got a few more related to transportation, okay? They will develop a parking plan that does not preclude the construction of a new infill metro rail station on or near Oklahoma Avenue if it is deemed necessary as the full build-out of the RFK campus. So they're going to start building stuff, but if they need a new metro stop, they're going to make room for it.
All right.
Where's Oklahoma Avenue? On the north side of it? I will say, B, now granted, I haven't been to the metro over there recently, but, like, the metro stations that are there serviced games at that stadium.
It did.
Like, maybe you need to refurbish the joints that are there, but, like, I don't really understand why you need more metros when the stadium will probably be bigger and have more amenities.
It was. You got to realize this thing wasn't used for how long?
I understand they probably need some refurbishments and stuff. I just don't understand why you need another metro.
But if
there's
if they're going to build this stadium as they say, and you're going to probably have to dig down some and do some different things, you may have to adjust where it's located, where the actual entrance point is located.
I get it. What did RFK seat? 55? It was small,
4,000.
Right. So 54,000 used to be able to take the metro there, and it wasn't that long ago. The Nats were still playing there. DC United was still playing there. Like, the metro still operates over there.
Mm-hmm.
But if they were able to handle 50, 60,000 people then.
But see, that's the difference, Jay. You're going to have 65,000 people to a stadium while on top of it, you're trying to build other stuff around
that's true.
Which is going to change up the amount of people and everything else over there.
Yeah, that's true. The club, how about this one? Because there is a lot of concern about tailgating. I think it's kind of misguided. I think people like view things through their current prism rather than trying to imagine what the next prism will look like.
Mm-hmm.
I've been to every stadium in the NFL. There are urban stadiums where people still tailgate.
Oh, yeah.
Go to Baltimore. You don't have to go that far to figure it out.
Yeah, they're fine. They tailgate in those parking lots.
What ends up happening is like people that have parking lots near there, people will let you park at their house. They'll tailgate for you. Like, mm-hmm. That used to happen back in the 90s. I think the, oh, my God, how are we going to tailgate is overthought. I think
it's overblown as well.
I also think, like, the bars that are right there, all of a sudden will have $3 hot dogs.
Listen,
like,
man, you may go tailgating, and people love to tailgate. But if you don't have the position and you have other means, you're going to try and figure out something else. And you will find a way.
I think for the people that are committed to tailgating, and I know lots of them, I am pro tailgating, right? Like, I love a good tailgate. It'll get figured out.
Yeah.
But I also think in 5 years, 6 years, when games are getting played at this stadium, you see the Waymo's driving around all of a sudden?
Mm-hmm.
Remember in Phoenix, they were everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I just think 5 years from now, so many more people will be just Ubering everywhere. Or, like, riding in these driverless cars everywhere.
Uh-huh.
Like, I just think the world's
going to
keep changing.
Even the mayor stated that.
What's that?
The mayor stated that in one of her talks.
What'd she say?
The driverless cars and the Ubering and how transportation is going to be, where people could talk about all the parking. Hell, well, most people won't be driving a car. They'll be showing up, getting dropped off, and then catching a car to go home.
Right. Like, if they had to do one thing forward thinking, because it doesn't look like my boats are going to happen. I've been banging the boat drum. Apparently, have you ever tried to take a boat up to the stadium?
To RFK Stadium?
Yeah.
No.
So a buddy of mine did. You know my boy, uh-huh. Kelly, because he's heard me talk about it, and he has a boat that he keeps right there by the airport.
Okay.
And he's like, dude, there's like a dam or something. Like, there's some restriction. I want boats.
They discussed the waterfront and all that stuff. And I believe if you're going to start building stuff on it, you're going to open it up.
Hold up, fellas.
You might have to dredge it.
That will be hard. I fished the water that's right there accessible to RFK.
Uh-huh.
Catch some big fish back there, too. But it will be kind of hard for boats to stay there because the water level is so low.
Right, you'd have to dredge it and all sorts.
But it's dammed up right now, so you're not getting much back in there.
There's something like preventing boats from
being. If they were to open that thing up, you can get some water in there.
So,
because I'm going to tell you, I don't care what the water look like. When you got waterfront, people will use it.
For sure. Things continue here. The team is committing to all sorts of environmental and community efforts. The club will ensure that the stadium and mixed-use environments are built in a manner that honors the legacy of the late Senator Robert F. Kennedy, including opportunities to memorialize him and his good works in park names, private street names, or other respectful measures. Obviously, you know, that thing was called DC Stadium, and then RFK was killed. He was assassinated in California, and they renamed it after him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I would be very surprised, Brian, if there wasn't a stadium naming rights deal.
It's going to be.
If it didn't become, you know, American Express Field at
American
RFK
Express,
Stadium.
Yeah, bam. Yeah. Listen, you're going to have that name in it, but you know what? The person that's dropping those dollars is going to be having their name up there, too.
The club has also committed $50 million for additional community benefits. And there's this, I like this. I'm going to read it, and then you tell me what you're hearing, B. The club will invest $50 million over 30 years in community benefits, prioritizing businesses and residents in Wards 5, 7, and 8, where, frankly, not many people are prioritizing businesses, I add parenthetically, including annual club reporting of the CBA investments. $20 million to be invested over 30 years for the creation and continued support of a Commander's Youth Academy focusing on educational success and youth sports located in Ward 7. The Commander's Youth Academy will be a year-round, high-impact initiative that leverages the power of football to deliver athletic development, tutoring services, academic support, mentorship, and leadership training to underserved youth across D.C. I love that. Like, build. Even if ultimately what you're building is kind of just a Boys and Girls Club, mm-hmm. but it's called Commander's Youth Academy instead of Boys and Girls Club, like a YMCA, just a place for kids to go where they can get their homework done, mm-hmm. they can play hoops, play football, like a safe space for underserved kids right there, 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10. But it's going to take more than just Commander's building a site there. It's going to take community people also being a part of it.
Sure.
And making sure that it stays how it's supposed to be.
When we had Councilman McDuffie on last week, mm-hmm. I asked him, because I read this really interesting article about food deserts in impoverished areas, right? And how, mm-hmm. like, people want to eat healthy, they just don't have access to healthy food. Like, if you don't have a car, and the only place you can get food within 2 miles of your house is fast food, it's really hard to live on salads and, you know, yeah, right, grilled chicken. $3 million to be invested over 10 years to provide grocery subsidies in Ward 7. That's putting an impact right where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
I tweeted it out. Seagraves has it if you want to look at that more. To me, by far, the headline is they're committing to cost overruns.
There you go.
And I think it's easy to get caught up in the how much, you know, how many major events will be there? I think major events where you're
going to... You got to get the damn stadium built before you start realizing how many major events are going to be somewhere.
I just think, to me...
If the stadium's not built right now, there's not many people going to be locking in. You know, you're going to find out there's going to be other spots getting locked in prior to that.
I think big events where you're talking, you get 3/4 of the stadium full, right? Mm-hmm. I think you got, call it 10 Commanders games a year. I think realistically you probably get 3 college football games in there. Soccer, like, you know, mm-hmm. Manchester United comes to town to play some soccer.
Yeah.
Like what you can count on, I think year to year you can count on like 20 big events a year. And then you add, there's a lot of like smaller stuff that gets hosted. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I think looking at Dallas and New York maybe is unfair because Jerry World is so over the top. New York is just so big. There's so much stuff that happens there.
I remember you got the lore of the nation's capital.
Sure.
So you can begin to pull stuff like that too.
But like if you look, Fortier wrote a story in the Post this morning about kind of the what constitutes major events and all these things. If you look at Atlanta, Minnesota, Vegas. I mean, they're all at about 130, 150 big events a year. I think
the question I would ask
ran correctly, that sounds about right.
If ran correctly, but there's a big old building over there right downtown right now called the Convention Center.
Yeah.
How many events happen there per year?
Ton.
Okay. So if you we're having a lot of events there, and some of them probably can't because of the way it is. You could probably push some stuff back over to that area, too. And let's be real. You think they're going to want to just get rid of that, too? That as well, because that is a moneymaker for them, too.
Yeah, totally. I think if you, like, I used to go to this crazy event, Taste of the South. You ever go to that?
I've been to it.
Taste of the South, they used to have it at the Armory when I was going to it, you know, 20, 15 years ago. I imagine now that's at Anthem or something. There are some of these big events that I think will rotate. If you have a dope indoor stadium, like I, so people understand.
Fact that the stadium gonna be indoor, that's gonna open up even more opportunities.
Totally. I've been to big ass stadiums when it's not a big ass event. Think about media night at the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's basically just the field is full and there's some performances and stuff. Like, there'll be lots of that.
I've been to Northwest Stadium when there are four or five different events going on at a time.
Right.
It's not necessarily the whole field is being occupied, but they have all of those different areas where we can have one event here for one company, another one upstairs for another company. Then where they used to have that club up there, that could be another one. So it you can have the 200. All 200 may not be 60,000 people, but you can have 200 events easily.
Right. And if you build out the surrounding areas, right? Like if you have cool bars over there and nice apartments and there's a grocery store and like there's a way for everybody just to operate and live there and it becomes like Nats Park. Like this Navy Yard area is at its most packed during Nats home games.
Mm-hmm.
But as five dudes that work down here every day, it's packed plenty all the time.
Yes.
Like you could build up another part of the city. And I think, I think that's the key here. I think it's an exciting day. Obviously there's a hearing over there. We're hoping to get Seagraves on the line. B. Mitchell Finley, 106.7 The Fan. A lot going on in Major League Baseball. B and I have been out in Ashburn day after day after day, but we wanted to kind of catch up with baseball as the trade deadline is right here. And obviously for the Washington Nationals, that's going to mean some decisions need to be made. Mark Zuckerman has been covering this team.
Mark's the best.
In my mind, since its inception. At Masson Sports, Mark Zuckerman joins us now on the Rude Guest Hotline. Zuck, what's up, dude? How are you, bud?
Hey, guys. It's going to be a busy 24 hours, I have a feeling.
Oh, boy. All right, so that's what we wanted to talk about. Obviously, the trade deadline, we're right up against it. I've seen some tweets about Mackenzie Gore and the Nationals are listening. What do you think is realistic over these next 24 hours from kind of veterans they're going to ship out to some of these really good young players?
Yeah, I mean, you start with the guys who are on the expiring contract. So Josh Bell, Michael Soroka, who pitched last night, Kyle Finnegan, who has pitched better the last several times after a really rough stretch there. You know, a couple of relievers like Andrew Chafin, even Luis Garcia, the reliever, not the second baseman. Who's only been here a little while, but has done really well, and he's a veteran on a one-year deal. You figure, if not all of them, most of them are probably going to go because they're not part of the long-term plan. They could have some value to contenders. You're not going to get a lot in return for most of them, I wouldn't think. It's not like any of them have just had fantastic seasons, but Soroka will bring you something because he can start. Finnegan, he may not be a closer on a contending team, but he's a fairly reliable an experienced bullpen arm, so that probably brings you something. Josh Bell's gotten hot lately, so that probably helps you some. So I think those are the obvious ones that you look at. And then you go into that next category, which is players who are under control beyond this year. And that's where you start wondering, would they move a Nathaniel Lowe, who has a year to go? Would they even move a Luis Garcia Jr., the second baseman, if they don't feel like he fits into the long-term plan? You know, they have an outfield logjam. Would teams be interested in an Alex Call or a Jacob Young for their defense and their base running? And then the big fish, Mackenzie Gore. There's plenty of interest from contending teams in him. It really boils down to, is Mike DiBartolo willing to move his ace, who has two more years of control? How much would he ask for in a trade? And then on top of that all, would ownership give him the approval to make that kind of trade? Because that's a big one that you've got to be able to justify to your fan base why you're trading away supposedly one of your core young pieces.
Do you think that's a possibility, though?
I think it's possible. I'm not going to say it's likely, though. I think there's a lot of hurdles to get there. And I take Mike DiBartolo at his word when he said to us, he'll listen when people are calling, and they've been calling for sure, but he's not actively trying to move Gore. Now, that said, somebody calls in and they say, hey, we're going to give you, you know, these three top 50 prospects in baseball for an ace who has 2.5 years of control, then you might have to say, okay, that is more valuable to us, and we're willing to do that. I think that's what it boils down to. Will anyone cross that threshold, whatever it is, that's willing to give up something of real consequence? If you make that move, you've got to be able to sell it to everybody, your fan base, the ownership, everybody, and say, I had to do it. This was too good to pass up. Is that going to happen? I'm going to say probably not, but I didn't think that the Soto deal was going to happen 3 years ago. And look at what A.J. Preller offered from the Padres. And in the end, as hard as that was, they got 3 All-Stars out of it and a couple more prospects we may see someday. So it's not going to be that big of a package, but if they offer something that it's clear that, hey, that this is too good to pass up, then I think you have to at least acknowledge that possibility.
Talking with Mark Zuckerman here on the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude makes the most reliable HVAC products in the DMV. You can give Mark a follow at Mark Zuckerman. Also, make sure you're checking out the Nats Chat podcast. The Gore stuff is really interesting. He seems like maybe league-wide kind of the biggest possible piece that could get moved. Why is there so much conversation around Gore and not around Abrams?
I think it has to do with where they are in their service time, I guess, at this point, where Mackenzie Gore is 2+ years away. That's the same spot that Soto was in. Abrams has another year after that. And, you know, what it boils down to is this. If you're the Nationals, and particularly DeBartolo now, and you see how things have gone this year and has not gone anywhere close to the way it was planned, and if you believe that this team really isn't going to be in a position to win big, and I'm not just talking about, like, have a winning record, but, like, challenge for a title before Gore can become a free agent after the 2027 season, then that's why you would consider the possibility. Whereas Abrams, you've got him to 2028. You would certainly hope by then things have turned around. You know, it also boils down to whatever feeling you may have that he might stay in the long run. You know, Gore is a Scott Boras client.
Right.
And we know how this usually works. It's not impossible, but chances are he's going to take it all the way to free agency before even considering signing. Abrams is not with Boras, so maybe as a guy that you could in theory sign long-term, you're less concerned about that. You know, you never say never in that stuff, but I think that's the difference with Gore versus Abrams. It's the difference in years to go before they can become a free agent, and quite honestly, who their agent is.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense. With DeBartolo in this role, and I mean, he's been in this role for, I don't know, 3 weeks, 2 weeks. Do you have any sense of if he wants to press the gas and try to be the architect of a long-term new rebuild and he can really get his fingerprints on it? Or is he kind of in like a caretaker situation where he's just got to get this to the finish line this year and then who knows what's going to happen?
Yeah, I think that's the fascinating part of it all. I'm sure he, you know, having worked here for a dozen years and worked his way up the ladder, I know he's got plenty of thoughts and ideas of what he would love to do if he had the opportunity. But you're still an interim GM and you don't know for sure that you're getting the job long term. And if his goal is to get the job long term, you've got to be making decisions now that convince ownership you are the right choice for it. So I think that's why when it comes to, you know, Gore and those kind of players who are here beyond this year, you have to be really careful with that and not make these gigantic decisions that affect the club years down the road when you don't know yourself if you're going to be here years down the road. The short-termers, that's a different story. So I think that is definitely a part of the equation, and it's a tricky position that he's in. Yeah. Yes, he's worked with the Lerner family. Yes, he probably has a leg up in some way because of his experience here, but he's not guaranteed the job. And I think at minimum, they're going to interview other candidates for it when the season's over. So he has an opportunity to make the case for himself, but how do you do that? Is it bold and let's say, hey, we're tearing it down and starting over, or is it more calculated? Here's a savvy move here, a savvy move there, and I still believe that this team can be a winning team with this core group together if you just give me the resources to do that next year.
You better be sitting down with the ownership and talking to them about the possibilities, get their feel and go do it, because sitting there not knowing what to do and doing nothing, that's the quickest way to get let go.
No, exactly. And that's why you have to be active in some ways. So, you know, we already saw them trade Ahmed Rosario the other day. That's why I said I think all of those players on the expiring contracts, if not all of them, almost all of them, it would make perfect sense to move them. So you do want to show them what you're capable of doing. And, you know, when a season doesn't go the way you want, can you turn those short-term assets into long-term assets? That's what the job really is. So I expect them to be aggressive in that regard. I think it just the real question is how bold is he willing to go and how much will they let him do that kind of thing under the circumstances. This isn't Mike Rizzo, who already has a lot of capital built up and knows, you know, at least prior to this year, you know, that he's making decisions that he's going to be around to see the benefits of. If you're DeBartolo, you don't know that for certain.
And then in the meantime, you've got a team still playing games, right? In Houston. And it's just really tough to know kind of what they've got. How are they responding kind of coming out of the break where a lot has changed? Definitely played some good baseball in Minnesota. The bats got hot. Got a chance to maybe take a series today, I think. I mean, what's kind of – how are the players holding up in all this?
You know, that first week after it all happened, there was still some shock to it, and I think there was an adjustment period. They came back from the All-Star break, and I feel like that they did kind of flip a switch there and said, all right, this is the new norm for us now. Let's go out and do what we can do. And they've played better. They've won two series in a row. They have a shot at another one today against a good team. And you do have your ace. Mackenzie Gore is scheduled to start today for all we know now. You know, that could change, I guess, but my guess is he will start. So they're actually in a decent position. And they're doing this with James Wood in the first real slump of his career as well. Let's point that out, that they've actually been able to win some games. They've done it by getting better pitching for the most part. So I think it's stabilized. Once you get through these next 48 hours, and there's going to be a good amount of change and a lot of faces gone, and they're going to have to replace them with AAA players, or perhaps in some of these trades they acquire big league players, this roster could look pretty different on Friday. And now that you're past that, now you've got exactly one-third of the season to go, 54 games after today, there's going to be a different kind of motivation, and they're going to have to summon that up in what is now, you know, a losing season, but an opportunity for whoever is here, all the young guys especially, to make their case for why they should be part of the plan moving forward.
Hey, last thing for me, Zuck, what's the deal with Dylan Cruz? I feel like we were told the injury wasn't that bad, and I feel like we haven't seen him in months.
We haven't.
So he is just past the two-month mark, and he did last night for the first time started his rehab assignment with Rochester AAA team. They're playing in Charlotte. He played four innings. He got two at-bats, got hit by a pitch, but everything appears to be fine there. I think, you know, you miss that much time, and they were very careful with it, but with oblique injuries, I think you see this all the time. It ends up being longer than you think because it's so easy to re-injure that with just one minor movement that they wanted to be 100% sure, and certainly in the state that they're in this season, why take that chance? So he's now got to make up time for all the games that he missed, and so I think he'll spend the week at AAA, and if at the end of that he's playing nine innings and he's feeling good, I think we could see him back in the lineup in the big leagues a week from now. It's been frustrating for everyone, himself included. The team was better with him in there, and they expect to be better with him back. But this wound up taking a, you know, good chunk of time. By the time he comes back, it's about 2.5 months. That's almost half a season that he ends up missing because of this.
That's crazy. Mark, I know you got to run.
Appreciate
Thank you for
Mark.
The time, man. We appreciate you.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
That's our friend Mark Zuckerman from Masson Sports. You can read all his work at MassonSports.com. Check out the Nats Chat podcast or give him a follow at Mark Zuckerman. Going to be a busy, busy 24 hours for the Washington Nationals. I'm curious what the heck they do with Gore, because that's obviously a big piece. Mm-hmm. And we'll
see.
What
they can get pieces for.
All right. Coming up at 11, Neil Greenberg joins the program.
B. Mitch and JP here. If you want comfort and convenience wherever life takes you, then you need to turn to Rood. With Wi-Fi compatibility, you have full control of your heating and cooling system right from your phone. Forgot to turn down the heat before vacation? You can adjust it in seconds. Plus, you'll get alerts if something's not right. These guys are the best, and they've installed new systems in my house, and I felt the difference instantly.
The best part working with Rood, the systems are whisper quiet. Not only is your house perfectly cool in the summer, you also got no more of those noisy interruptions that wake you up in the middle of the night. The key is humidity control. It's hot and humid in D.C. If you control the humidity, you control the temperature in your house. That's what Rude does. Comfort and performance perfectly balanced. B, you got to tell them about the cash too, man. You can qualify for federal tax credits up to $2,000 on heat pumps through 2032. Check out Rude.com/federal incentives to learn more.
Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. And remember, if it ain't Rude,
it ain't right. B. Mitch and Finley, 106.7 The Fan. So Seagraves just tweeted this out. And this just kind of pisses me off, Brian. So everybody's waiting for this hearing. City Council, I think a ton of Burgundy and Gold fans are going to roll in there and testify they want this stadium to get built. This is the public hearing.
Uh-huh.
Now, this was 15 minutes ago, but Seagraves tweeted out, in typical Mendo, I guess that's Chairman Mendelson's nickname, in typical Mendo fashion, 10 a.m. hearing on RFK Stadium, more than 30 minutes late, starting as public, Commanders representatives, Mayor Bowser, and several council D.C. council members wait. Chairman Mendelson reportedly in closed-door meeting. You just flexing?
Bruh, that's what I said from the beginning. This dude here is just trying to, he wants to in some type of way act as if, look what I did, look what I did. Really, he's not doing nothing but holding things up.
Just flexing. I did want to circle back on this because we're going to get pretty Commanders heavy here. You think they should trade Gore?
Listen, man, baseball, building baseball teams troubles me. It's strange. And I know what people, well, it's just different. It's just, how do you say you're going to rebuild when you constantly get rid of the people that can help you build quicker? You know, so I understand it. Now, if they get a hell of a haul, yes. But even when you mention C.J. Abrams, you got to keep some damn players. You know, I know you could get, just like you got that big haul for Soto and a lot of people worked out, you can get a big haul and they all don't work out.
Well, it's like the Soto trade, you could say they did get some really good players, right?
Yeah, but
they're 20 games under 500.
Yeah, but you some of those players you want to at least have them on your team when your team is playing better, right?
Dude, it's kind of interesting. I don't know who I was talking to about this yesterday, but we got to experience the Nationals as a team that spent and had good ownership and they aggressively tried to win championships. It seemed like it was like that for like a decade. They had to build it up and then they started really spending money and building out a championship team. Now they operate like the Pirates, you know? They operate like a have not. Mm-hmm. And their record reflects it. I mean, their record's pretty similar to like the Athletics or the Pirates. And I don't know if it's better. I think it's Shakespeare. Is it better to have loved and lost than to have never loved at all? Like, I'm in this Nats zone where it's just so frustrating.
You know how
to
much
see
it hurts.
Right. Like, now I know what this should look like.
Yeah.
How you could build around Wood and Gore and Abrams. You could build around these dudes.
Yes.
Or you could just leave them out there on the island to flip them again and then just reset the cycle.
It's like, it seems like this team is always trying to flip something. When do you get to a point where you have to add people to things that you have? We always talk about building things. We talk about a foundation. When do you get the foundation that you go, right now there's no foundation. If you just keep getting rid of everybody that begins to show something, then where's the foundation?
Right.
I mean, you build nothing without a foundation. So at this point, sometimes you got to just bite the bullet and say, we're going to keep these guys along, especially if the guys are good, and start bringing people to add to that. You can't always be looking for the next thing when you don't have a thing.
See, my problem is I just don't think until the learners sell, I just don't have much faith in them spending money. Now, I would love to be proven wrong. If they go back to how they operated during the 2010s, mm-hmm. Left hand up, I'll apologize to you. But currently, you're running a very cheap organization. And until that changes, I think you should trade Gore. Like, I understand that it sucks, But just keep getting more prospects in, so maybe the next ownership will come in and they'll spend around stud young players. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's where I'm at. Landfill, where are you? Trade Gore or not?
Yeah, they should trade him.
Why?
Well, they're definitely not going to.